This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. So, how did your weekend go?
We were sort of there about. Well, we played the online Friday day. I think we came fifth in that, which wasn't too bad. And then we played the 10A pairs in Auckland and we came seventh in that. So we weren't too far away in that. And then we played in the teams. So I made the top six in the finals. Quite a fair weekend. Well run by Auckland Bridge Club. Food was good. Everything went pretty much like clockwork. Kevin Hu was doing the directing under supervision, but he had Paul Coleman helping him. They did a great job. Of course, when you're playing,
you don't notice much.
You never know what's going on behind the scenes, but it seemed to me like everything went very well.
Well, the results were slightly delayed, Barry.
Oh, I had a bit of a glitch with those, the peers' results going out.
So who won the teams?
Well, it's a dramatic finish in the teams where the Weir team had been doing really well. That was Michael Weir, Matthew McManus, Gary Tislevol and Hugh McGarr won the qualifying easily, leading all day. And then going into the last match, they were 14 VPs ahead of Jeremy Fraser-Hoskin's team. That was Jeremy Fraser-Hoskin and Fraser Roo, Jack James and Wayne Burrows. Jack and Wayne, because they'd already won the pairs.
That's
anyway,
right.
They were 14 VPs behind, which is quite a way. They had a huge win over the Weir team and got up to win. I'm sure they'd be ecstatic, but the Weir team would probably get a very dramatic finish.
Go Palmy!
Funnily enough, there were some big names that didn't even make the final or the plate. People that had won this thing many times. People didn't make the top 12.
Did they take the teams upstairs?
The final is always played upstairs.
Okay.
So the 12 teams upstairs, the six in the final and the six in the plate. I mean, I think it was a good format. Quite enjoyed it.
Nice. So who did downstairs?
I never went downstairs, so I'm not sure who did that.
You meant to be Johnny on the spot. You need to know everything.
I was on the spot, but I just sat there at my table. They brought up all this yummy food for me to eat. Why would I move?
Absolutely. Good on Jack. He's in winning form.
He is. So winning the pairs and the teams, that doesn't happen very often. Don't forget they won the Kelly Pierce only a week or two ago as well. 10 out Rotorua.
Yeah,
so great form.
What was your favourite convention that you used today, Barry? Which one came up the most?
We had a few 2-over-1 sequences, which are always quite fun.
Oh, that's Game Force. Is that right?
Yeah. We had a few of those. Pretty happy with the way we sort of played, especially in the final.
Good preparation for India?
Oh, well, we're not going to India.
Newsflash, people. There's no people going to India.
Could not get visas, would you believe? Jenny and I didn't because we were away. The rest of our team all tried to get visas. You're supposed to do it online. Trying to get a visa to go to India is like trying to pass a camel through the eye of a needle. Long story short, the website crashed, I don't know how many times. A couple of our teammates even went into the embassy in Auckland. They told them basically to go away and do it online, which is what they've been trying to do for the last 2 weeks. Anyway, the end of the day, it was just too difficult. So there'll be no New Zealand team in the Asia Cup. So a bit of a shame.
Ifayakine. Coming up next, it's time for the Gin Club. That's juniors, intermediates and novice. And our man on the spot, Mr. Gin himself, it's Ross Longney.
Hey, Mr. Gin, I can see the shape you're in.
How you going, Ross?
I'm well, thank you, Mariana. Morning, Barry.
Never saw you on the weekend, Ross, so I can catch up with you. You were there on Saturday, were you?
Played on Saturday, but not on Sunday or Monday.
That's why I didn't see you then. Lots of Gin Club members at the Auckland Bridge Club on the weekend. What are they called now, Mariana?
Remuera Bowling and Bridge Club.
That's going to take a little bit of getting used to.
Shall we just abbreviate it to Remuera in our discussions?
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
It was quite a quiet weekend for Bridge, really, around the country, considering it was Easter. It was only in Auckland that it was busy. On Friday, there was the online tournaments, the fundraisers for the youth group to China. In the end, the intermediate and junior section was pretty well entered. There were quite a good number of entries. Top junior pair, first of all, was Nicole Meldrum from Wanaka and Kath Jones from Kairangi. And the top intermediate pair wow, was Caroline and Mark Buckley from Papatoetoe. Now, I've known them for a couple of years. They're very keen players, so that was a great result for them. They just sneaked in. There was a Swiss pair. I think they won 4 out of 6. Coming with a late rush was Bret Hart and Bill Leach from Mount Albert. They might have won 6 out of 6. They got second on Friday, but they had their comeback on Saturday because they won the Auckland Congress intermediate pairs, Bret and Bill.
Yeah,
did.
Good on them.
And second in that were Betty Hopley and Sue Bell. And guess which club they come from?
East Coast Bay, I was guessing.
I think they must be serving free pickle juice to all their members, Barry. Somehow or other. Top junior pair, there were Anne Millard from Richmond and Paul Prestige from Motueka. So they were a long way from home. And then they came up to Auckland and played very well. There were some really competitive junior pairs playing on Saturday Remuera, and really nice to meet a lot of those and have a chat to them.
Cool.
Meantime, down in Levin, they had their multi-grade, and the top intermediate pair there was Sam Anoka and Yvonne Rowe from Parapara Umu. Now, I've also, Barry, because you got through to the finals on Monday, you didn't play in the Auckland Easter Congress pairs on the Monday. A wonderful result there. Third overall, with Thomas Freeman Green and Christina Hyde. Thomas from Remuera and Christina from Waiheke, both intermediate players, and they managed to third in that open tournament. And they beat some really, really good open pairs.
I've run into Thomas a few times, and I didn't notice that he'd finished third with Christina. Yeah, that was awesome. That was very impressive.
And thank you to Karen Harris for taking his drink bottle back. He left it in Hamilton.
We're actually playing teams with Christina and him at Congress. So he emailed me this morning. So I think the team is, you know, looking at it. But a lot of water to go under the bridge before we get to Congress, Thomas.
So harking back to the intermediate pairs online, I see they ended up with 11 tables, which wasn't too bad. And I also noticed you did sneak into the top half there, Ross. Maybe you did get over 50.
We just have to get that system right for when we play this restricted, Barry.
I'm waiting for the email every day. I click on my email.
I texted
yet, but I'll be studying it every night.
I texted
you. Mariana.
Said we'll have a crack at 2 over 1.
Did you, Barry? You want to play 2 over 1 with Barry?
Well, he asked me what I would play, and I sort of said weak no trump or strong no trump. And I said, well, I'd probably prefer strong, but I'm happy to play weak. And then he mentioned 2 over 1, and I thought, well, it might get a little bit complicated. And he decided that was still a good idea.
We'll see. Time will tell. We've got a couple of months to work that out. I had a nice comment from Neil from Orewa over the weekend about the show. He's really enjoying it, now listening every week. And Nicole from East Coast Bays has emailed me and says she, you know, really loves it. She still wants to have that little connection through New Zealand Bridge. She still finds it hard to actually find the way of getting on.
Yeah. We'll see what we can do with that.
That sounds good. And thank you for sending those radio stations that air the program.
Okay, Ross, what else has been happening?
Okay, well, Jack has produced the ranking list in our end of the table. Alex Meyer is still top of the local master list, but she's very, very close to going into the provincial masters. In the club masters, which is the top of the junior level, Ellie Malloy from Wellington Club. Now, we have talked about her before. In this first quarter, she's managed to accumulate 10 A points out of 37 in total, which is an excellent effort. And we have talked also about Corbin Titter from Taradale and Grace Wang from Rotorua, who are second and third in that one. Now, here's one for you too. Certificate of proficiency. Top is Amy Sue from Hamilton Club.
Yep.
Doing really, really nicely. Got a nice little lead over Victoria Lidicote from Palmerston North. That's positive for Hamilton.
And, yeah, she's doing really well, Ross. I think she got our most promising player of the year.
They won the Hamilton Juniors and got second in the Cambridge Juniors. That would have added to that position.
So they were doing well in the league.
In the novice section, my friend Frank Attai from Dada East Coast Bays. Number one in the novices. So that's a lovely lift up for him. And second is Thomas Lee, whom I played against on Saturday. He was playing with Chris Stuckey. So Thomas has poked his head up above the parapet now. So that's really good to see. That's that side of things from the gym club members. Some doing really, really, really well. Very exciting. Junior intermediate tournaments. What do you think of the merits of running a separate junior and intermediate tournament as opposed to running an intermediate junior tournament combined.
Oh, all together.
If you can get the numbers, that's definitely the way to go, I think. The reason clubs have tended to combine them is they struggle with one or the other to get enough to make it viable. I think that's the ideal, is having a separate junior and a separate intermediate.
Well, coming up this weekend, you see that at Howick, they have an intermediate/junior pairs. They've got 14 tables. Palmerston North, these are all this weekend. Palmerston North have an intermediate tournament with 12 tables and a junior tournament with 5. And Upper Hutt have an intermediate tournament with 12 tables and a junior tournament with 4. And I'm just thinking, is it better to have 17 tables or 18 tables rather than a 12 and a 6? I don't know the answer to that. I know East Coast Bays have an interesting thing coming up where they have intermediate tournament, which is 2 sessions, and they have a junior tournament, which is just 1 session, and the second session is in November, like months later.
What you're saying, it sounds like it's the juniors that are struggling for numbers a little bit, whereas the intermediates are not too bad. Whether they want to run a 4 or 5 table junior, maybe they think that's not quite so good for juniors. So we need a few more juniors to put their heads up.
I agree. My proposal to the Warkworth Club for a junior and intermediate tournament was reviewed last Tuesday.
And, there you go.
They've decided that they would like to survey the members to find out really what they want. The committee doesn't feel they have understanding of members' needs and wants. They've figured that they'll target 2028 rather than 2027, give themselves plenty of time to do it and do it well, which I can't disagree with.
How many of your club members are actually intermediate? What's the percentage?
Well, 100% of the club members are intermediate and junior. I can tell
you that.
Oh, that's
right, because you did say that you don't have any open players.
We don't have any open players. And I would say probably 60% would be juniors.
Mm. You know what, Mariana? Okay. If that Ross Longley would just stop piking out and start playing some A-point tournaments and getting through to open, they'd have an open player. I spoke to Bill Leach on the weekend and we decided he was just a bloody wimp. Are we allowed to broadcast that?
Yes, of course you are. Repeat it, Barry.
But then Bill can hardly talk because he's been doing that for years.
If all of your members belong to the gin club, are they surveying because there's a majority of members that don't actually play tournaments? Yeah, that would make sense.
There's very few of us play tournaments, so they're really trying to get a feel whether whether there's a need within the club to have a tournament for our members as opposed to just having a tournament for the wider Auckland City.
It's interesting, Ross. I think I've asked you this before, but roughly how many members of what we've got and how few of those or how many of those actually play tournaments?
Say we have 100.
Yep.
And there's probably only 4 or 5 of us play tournaments.
Yep. Oh, okay. I see.
Not much interest in travelling far for a tournament.
Well, of course, that's the benefit of having a tournament there. That was, they won't have to travel, will they? So maybe, maybe a few more of them would play, and if they enjoyed it, maybe they might decide to venture a little bit further. And if you talk to them about the world famous East Coast Bays Club, they can play theirs.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping. And next year is the 60th anniversary of Warkworth Bridge Club, so I thought that was a really good thing to celebrate.
I think so too.
It's a good sort of hook to hang a tournament on.
That's right, I agree.
But they could get a cake, cutting the cake with the oldest and the youngest member. They could do lots of things. They should celebrate that jubilee, 60 years, and say, put on their intermediate tournament. That's a great way to get it in.
We could have whistles and party hats and music and...
Yeah. Where are you off to this weekend?
This weekend out to Howick. It's always very well run, very well directed by either Kevin or Lysandra. It's about it from me for this week.
The Gin Man leads you out with the Gin Club motto.
Observa omne neminem time. Respect all, fear none. Have a good week.
Light it and send it out.
E hāre ake nei. Coming next, we're off to the courthouse.
To know me is to love me. I must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can.
Good morning, Patrick. How are we today?
Yeah, we're fine.
Nice.
I didn't think it was fine. We just heard it was raining in Warkworth, so I don't know what it's like where you are.
Yeah, no, it's pretty grey out there. It's not exactly raining at the moment. Yeah, no, it's not good.
The question was a little bit about dummy. I mean, you quite often hear people say that everybody's responsible for dummy, or what Mariana said, that the declarer is responsible for dummy, or is dummy responsible? Who's responsible for dummy?
Dummy is responsible for putting it down accurately. Well, it doesn't specifically say the declaring side is responsible for dummy. They wind up getting penalised if it works out badly for them. Like, two things can happen. Let's say there's an ace hidden in dummy and declarer never takes that ace because it was hidden under another card. So the declaring side is disadvantaged. Then right. The declaring side will stay disadvantaged. But if instead, let's say that a card is hidden and the declaring side gets an advantage from it, maybe they were able to rough something in dummy that they couldn't otherwise do or something like that, but declarer gets extra tricks, then that will be taken off them. Revokes aren't penalised. Like, for instance, let's say declarer dummy revoked because a card was missing, then they effectively revoked. But let's say declarer could do that anyway. They had ace, king in another club and there was only one club in dummy, but there should have been two. So declarer could have played ace of clubs, king of clubs, and then roughed a club. So although dummy revoked because they roughed the second club, declarer didn't gain any advantage from the revoke. So there would be no adjustment. Revokes not showing properly, they're not penalised, right?
Oh.
But if it gains an advantage for the declaring side, then the adjustment would be made. If the declaring side has shot themselves in the foot and they make less tricks, tough luck.
Tough luck. Wow.
Many years ago, where there's a hidden king in dummy, I was declarer. This is the Matamata Bridge Club. This lady called Desmond Dickinson decided to underlead her ace against a suit contract. And I had Jack X opposite three to the queen. She led low and it went low, low, and I won my jack. From my point of view, I just had Jack X opposite queen third. And I thought, well, this is pretty bizarre. And I thought, oh, well, can't think of anything else to do. So I played another card back. She played low and I put the queen up and it held. And I thought, how could this possibly be? How could I win the jack on the first round of the queen? I just couldn't imagine what could have happened when I was missing the ace and the king.
It's actually a very interesting situation. If the king had been showing in dummy, you would have won the first trick. That's fine. But when you led towards the king queen, there's no way that they would have ducked the ace now. Whether they should have ducked it anyway is another matter, but there's no way they would have ducked the ace. So you gained a trick through dummy not being shown properly. So the director would have adjusted or should have adjusted. It sounds to me like you got away with it. But
none of us knew that. Well, at that point, of course, we didn't realise that the king was still there.
But at the end of the hand, someone would have found it, right?
That's right. Or partway through, yes.
At the end of the hand, you call the director.
Okay.
That's what the director should have ruled, is that king not showing disadvantaged the defence because they wouldn't have ducked their ace the second time. So the defence would get that trick back.
None of us even thought to call the director for this, to be honest.
As you well know, that happens far too frequently.
Yeah. All I can remember is I was so curious about this, even though I should have been sitting about the hand. I thought, God, what on earth is happening in this suit? So I played a third one and roughed it, in which case I certainly found out where one of them was because there was a shriek on my left. She'd assumed I had the king because I'd won the jack, and she thought she wasn't going to put her ace up on nothing, so she thought she'd wait for my king. But anyway.
Yeah, well, that's why they've been disadvantaged, because yes, they made an inference through looking at dummy that wasn't put down properly. That's why that should have been adjusted.
When people say that everybody's responsible for dummy, that's not really the case.
Yeah, well, you could ask them to point that out to you in the rule book somewhere. Yes, and you could haul out the rule book. I bet you can't find it.
Really? Okay. The bit about the dummy that I feel a lot of people just ignore is when you go to play from dummy and you're meant to be in your hand and you actually do touch a card or say play this one and then they say it's from your hand. I don't think very many people call for the director to say whether or not you can accept that.
Yeah, well, I understand that because, as you know, people don't call the director when they should, and some people think they know the rules, and there's nothing an intermediate player likes more than telling a junior player what the rules are. And one of the rules is you call the director, right?
Yeah.
But there's nothing a player likes more than telling someone lower than them what should happen. And they're often wrong. But the rule is that dummy is allowed to prevent partner from doing the wrong thing, but they're not allowed to point out an infraction that's already taken place. In terms of this situation, if declarer has actually already led from the wrong hand, dummy should not even say anything. Should not even point it out.
Yeah.
But if declarer pulls a card out of their hand, moves it so that he's obviously picking it out to put it down on the table, but he hasn't played it yet, then dummy can prevent them from leading from the wrong hand by saying, you're in dummy. Or if declarer reaches across the table, because they're one of those people who likes to pull the cards themselves, if they haven't reached across and tucked it yet, dummy can say, you're in your own hand, because it hasn't happened yet. But once it has happened, dummy's not allowed to point out an infraction at the table. Now, what dummy can do is if somebody else points out the infraction, so let's say declarer reaches across the table and touches a card and dummy when they're in their hand, and one of the defenders says, you're in your hand, dummy can call the director because somebody else has pointed out the infraction.
Right.
So dummy can't initiate a call for the director unless somebody else has already pointed out that there has been an infraction.
Wow. Patrick would do much better, I'm sure, if his partners were able to prevent him from doing the wrong thing more often. Well,
hard to stop partner doing the wrong thing, but there you go.
Thank you, Patrick.
That's awesome. Thank you very much for that.
That one's pretty straightforward this morning. Barry's case was interesting. It was a good example of how the rules should be applied.
Cool.
I do think, though, that none of us had any idea that we should be calling the director when this card showed up in dummy.
If you're not sure, it's one of those things. If there's been something that's gone wrong, it says you call the director. It doesn't say call the director if you want to. If you're not sure, you can always say, oh, that's an unusual one. Perhaps we should just make sure we get the right ruling and call the director. And you can call the director very politely and say, oh, is there something that covers this, director, or something like that? You don't have to say, sheriff, they shot their partner, or whatever it was.
It was such a funny thing to happen that I still remember it. It was over 30 years ago, so it's probably too late to get an adjustment, I think.
Oh, you've got to worry when your short-term memory goes and your long-term memory is there, Barry.
Thank you, Bailiff.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's really awesome, yeah.
Okay, so we're up to tip time.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to run.
I'm frustrated. I'm annoyed. I'm disappointed. And I'm over it. I've given you this tip before.
Yeah.
It just keeps on not happening. So people don't do it. Or maybe they start doing it and they forget about doing it. And it's such an important thing. If you open the bidding one heart, and they ever call two clubs, say, and it goes pass, pass to you, there's only one bid that you should be thinking about. You know, you might have six hearts and three spades and three diamonds and one club, and you want to rebid those six-card heart suit, or you want to do this or that or the other. If you're short of the suit they overcalled in, you've got to double. There's only one way that you're going to get a big number on this hand. And that is if partner is sitting there just praying that you're going to make a takeout double.
You're going to make a takeout double.
But bidding a suit isn't going to do it. The only time I believe you can not double there is if you've got a whole lot of the suit they've just overcalled in which case partner's probably not foaming at the mouth waiting for you to make a takeout double. And even if they are, they've probably got somewhere better to go. So we don't want to give them a chance to escape. But most of the time, particularly when you have a singleton or even a void in their suit, that's the time to double. And that's the time there's going to be blood all over the floor, Mariana. They're going to go for big numbers. They're going to go for 1,100, 800, 1,400. Somebody went 6 or 7 light the other day in Auckland, I know. And I think it might have been 2,000 they went for.
Oh my goodness.
You've got to just remember when it comes around to you, the best bid you can make is double. If partner's not waiting, well, they're going to bid something. If you've already opened your suit, they know about that already. They can put you back to that or whatever. Now, the other tip that I have is there are some ethical considerations. And it's not very sexy to talk about ethics. If you want partner to find a takeout double and they open one heart and they bid two clubs and you're sitting there looking at King Jack 10, 9, 7 of clubs and thinking, whoa, this is my birthday, partner's going to double. You've got to pass, and you've got to pass smoothly. You can't sit there and fidget and make it clear to partner that you've got something, because that makes it harder for partner to find a takeout double. You're going to get the sheriff called over and say, hey, look, that person over there squirmed and wriggled and then finally passed, and now their partner's miraculously found this bid. So if you do want to pass it around to partner praying they're going to make a negative double, you need to do it smoothly.
Smoothly.
It's the name of my horse. A smooth pass is worth its weight in gold. So there's two tips for the price of one there. One, if you're in the pass out seat, double is the only bid that's worth a pinch of nanny goat pup. And two, if you're the person who's passing, don't make it an agonized pass, because you're passing information to your partner that makes it easier for them to think, oh, I wonder what they're agonizing about. Oh, I know, they must have a whole lot of clubs. You know, you might open a diamond and they make a weak jump to two hearts and it goes pass, pass to you. Just ask yourself, what the hell is going on here? They've got a weak jump and I've just got my 13 count I opened on. Why is the bidding stopped in two hearts? If you think about it, most of the time, it's actually quite logical. Partner almost certainly has got some values over there. They're quite likely they've got a whole lot of hearts, and you need to find a double. That's my tip. And it's just not happening enough. I'm not seeing enough blood. I'm not seeing enough gore and people getting beaten up and going four light doubled. And it's all great fun. It's all part of the fun of bridge. Don't you just love it when you go to bridge and somebody doubles and you go for 1,100, Mariana?
No, I don't love it. The other people love it. And if I'm not playing against you at the table, then you probably love it. But I don't see you walking around with a bucket and a mop cleaning up all this blood.
Well, that's because there's not enough of it going on.
Yeah, true.
I want more of it.
Okay, people, if your partner found a takeout double which you passed smoothly, let us know. bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com.
Well, you pass smoothly before the double, and then when it goes double, you passed even more smoothly and tried not to lick your lips, you know.
And you had
your
poker face. Well, that's about it for this week. For anyone else having bridge this week, good luck, and we'll see you at the tables.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international, nationwide.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.